People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. You're listening to Fine Music Radio, and this is Rodney Trudgeon welcoming you to this week's edition of People of Note. Now, here's a thought. We are going to be talking about a brave new approach to songwriting, a book written by Clive Ridgway, which is subtitled More Than Music, It's the Human Connection. Now, let me tell you that Clive Ridgway is a songwriter, musician, music producer, author, and teacher, and he's composed songs for many of South Africa's most successful recording artists. For example, Jonathan Butler, Judith Sipuma, Dr. Victor, Kurt Darren, Juanita Duplessis, Lance James, Jonathan Field, Billy Forrest, Clive Bruce, the name and the lists go on. And so Clive has also performed professionally throughout the country and recorded 7 albums with his band Rocking Horse. And he's even made 2 trips to Nashville in the USA to sharpen his songwriting skills. And Clive is with me here. Clive, welcome. Welcome indeed to Fine Music Radio.
Hi, Rodney. Thanks so much for having me.
It's great to have you. And I'm interested, first of all, you've started, you and your wife, the Cape Town School of Songwriting. And you've just released, I think it's your 2nd or 3rd book, Head, Heart and Hands, A Brave New Approach to Songwriting. But you began your life in radio, didn't you? And now you've gone this direction into songwriting to give some people the benefit of your knowledge.
Thanks, Rodney. Yeah, I spent a lot of time in radio, but I actually entered radio via music. So I was at WITS as a student, did a BA and an HDE with a view to becoming a teacher, but I played music at the same time, you know, so I never really got into teaching that much. I played music professionally, but always had an inclination towards teaching and education, because, you know, I think those are important things.
And you've had that all through, haven't you, even through your radio time?
That's correct. So I got involved with our record company was Transistor Music at the time. They were connected with Radio Good Hope. So we basically sort of were a band that we performed, you know, throughout the country. We performed with a lot of the big names, you know, that people were familiar with at the time. That would have been through the sort of late 80s, early 90s. And then when the SABC wanted to start a radio station, Radio Contre, which became Radio KFM, they invited me to come and become music manager on the station.
So you weren't actually a broadcaster. You were always manager, advisor, all that sort of thing.
That's correct. Okay. You know, I eventually became program director of KFM and then also program director of Smile 90.4 FM.
So radio has been in your blood very much so, alongside music. And that's interesting now that you've left radio and yet music is now with you and teaching, so it's music and teaching, finally, that you get to do. Is that right?
That's correct. But where I've been very fortunate is that, you know, having gotten into the broadcasting side from music, I was able to learn a lot about the communication process. And all of that kind of, you know, sort of worked synergistically together to kind of, you know, give me insight into both the broadcasting world and also the music world and the songwriting world in terms of what it is that sits at the core of communicating both through the voice as well as through music. And that's informed what I do at the Cape Town School of Songwriting, and that's what I've tried to kind of unpack and write about in the books that I've written.
This idea of communication is very important to you, isn't it, Clive? Because when we came into the studio and we were sitting chatting, you told me how radio is such an ideal communicator if you use it the right way. And music is very much part of that, being used the right way.
Rodney, that's so true and very interesting. You know, we talk about theater of the mind
in terms
of radio, but music and songs are also theater of the mind.
Yes.
And part of what I teach is this, you know, the idea of the story in the song. You know, what is the concept? What is the key messaging line? And how is that conveyed in terms of the narrative and the story of the song? And there's something magical and something incredibly powerful about it. And, you know, the conclusion that I've come to is that the song is the most powerful way of expressing the human condition and the human spirit.
Yes, hence your subtitle on this book, More Than Music, It's the Human Connection.
That's right.
So that obviously means a lot to you. And just on that subject as well, there's also the literary side, because if you're writing the words to a song, do you teach that as well?
Absolutely. I teach the music of language and the language of music.
Oh, that's
and how
a neat
the two,
way of putting
how
it.
The two come together.
Yeah.
We can use them to create songs. Songs that really connect on an authentic level.
They obviously contemporary songs, aren't they? But do you work on various styles? There's so many styles these days.
Rodney, absolutely. I've written songs ranging from country to R&B to classical crossover. I've just, in fact, finished an album for an American publisher of a full album of crooner songs that one could call jazz standards in that style. And it's been the most remarkable project to work on. I've worked with John Walton and the Cine Magic guys. The Cape Town Philharmonic came to record those tracks with Cape Town's finest session musicians.
Let me tell you something that might surprise you. I heard one of those tracks because I was at a lunch with John Walton and with the conductor of the orchestra, Bernhard Goehler, and his wife. And he pulled out his cell phone and told me that he'd just been working on this. Have to say, I forget which one he played. Yeah. And I remember commenting, it sounds exactly like you imagine the crooners to sound, the crooners of the old day. It sounded wonderful. Our orchestra sounded so great.
It was wonderful. I nearly brought one of those tracks with to play, but
pity.
I thought, no, I better not, because, you know, the publisher doesn't have it yet.
Fair
would have been a bit naughty of me, but I was so tempted to bring one of those songs along. I'm so proud of that project.
Well, there you are. I've given you the sort of a bit of an opening there. But talking about music, let's see what you've chosen for the first song, Mona Lisa, Nat King Cole. Wow.
Yeah, it's funny. I get quite emotional when I talk about this track. It's something I remember listening to as a child, and I think this is where this music bug, you know, where it comes from. I recall a couple of songs, you know, that I remember, you know, I don't know when, but I just remember as a child hearing these songs, and Mona Lisa was one of that. That rich voice of Nat King Cole singing that, you know, Mona Lisa, Mona Lisa, men have named you. You're so like the lady with the mystic smile.
I mean, lovely just, words as I'm, well, let alone that lovely melody.
It's just absolutely exquisite. And even as a probably a couple of years old, 3, 4, I don't know what it was. It must have been that time. And it resonated in a way. I probably didn't understand the words and anything, but it was just the energy of the music. And then later on, listening to the song, Willie Nelson actually did a version of that as well. But what an exquisitely written song. And these are the kind of songs that I've tried all my life to write. And this is the type of song that I am now using, or I'm trying to teach songwriters to write. It's absolutely beautiful. The music, the words, the way it works together, and, of course, the production and that beautiful voice of Nat King Cole. Exquisite.
Lisa, Mona Lisa, men have named you. You're so like the lady with the mystic smile. Is it only 'cause you're lonely they have blamed you for that Mona Lisa strangeness in your smile? Do you smile to tempt a lover, Mona Lisa? Or is this your way to hide a broken heart? Many dreams have been brought to your doorstep. They just lie there and they die. Are you warm? Are you real? Mona Lisa, are just a cold and lonely, lovely work of tempt a lover, Mona Lisa? Or is this your way to hide a broken heart? Many dreams have been brought to your doorstep. They just lie there and they die. Are you warm? Are you real? Mona Lisa, are just a cold, lonely, lovely work of art? Mona Lisa, Mona Lisa.
What a beautiful song, and what a beautiful voice. In fact, there are three things there, Clive, that come together: the actual words, the tune, the melody, and the voice, to make up Mona Lisa with Nat King Cole there. The first choice of my guest, Clive Ridgway, on People of Note this week here on Fine Music Radio. And in fact, we're talking about the human condition in this world of radio and of voice and writing songs. The latest book that Clive has written is called Head, Heart and Hands, A Brave New Approach to Songwriting. More than music, it's the human connection. That's coming out very strongly, this human connection, Clive. So I want to find out more about your songwriting school, which I think you and your wife established after you'd left radio and all that.
That's right.
What, I mean, it might sound like a silly question, but how does it work? Do you go once a week for a lesson? Do you join for a course, or how does it work?
Yeah, Rodney, we started, it must have been about 15 years ago, we started
this school.
It's been running a while. And we present courses, they're 8-week courses. It's once a week that people come through to our little school in Rondebosch. And the course includes some instruction, some workshopping, and then recording, because it's all a practical thing. So the idea is that we take our students through this process, and we teach them a method of writing. We give them the background and the philosophy, if you want to call it that, in terms of the style that we recommend they write in. And then they put into practice, and we record the songs as singer-songwriter demos.
So where do they come from, or do you audition them to see if they've got what it takes, possibly?
You know, the only thing that I require is that people have a passion for songs. And so we've worked with people, and in fact, we've got people with doctorates. You know, in fact, the course we're doing right now, we've got somebody with a PhD in the course. We've got somebody who wants to write songs for music theater. We've got an editor of magazines who's doing the course.
And these are people of any age,
any
as well,
age,
actually.
Absolutely any age. It's just a passion for song. Mm-hmm. And I like working with people more who are interested in the lyric side than the music side. Because,
oh, that's interesting.
You know, what happens is a lot of people, you know, this is why I say that a song is more than music. And one of the reasons why the new book is called A Brave New Approach to Songwriting is because I question the common sense idea of what a song is. People think a song is basically a musical entity with lyrics put in. But the way I look at it is that a song is a composition of words intended to be sung. Because when you think about it, when you look at the words song and sing, it's a voice thing.
Yes.
And this is the interesting thing about it, that ultimately what tends to happen is that the words tend to be devalued in the common sense approach. So a lot of people can play three or four chords on a guitar, and I've had really gifted, very, very skillful musicians come to the course saying they're battling to write songs because ultimately they don't understand that it's the vocal line that is the critical thing with a song. And so this is where the critical thinking that we apply is that we take a different perspective on what a song is, and we write it from songwriting then gets tackled from a different perspective, which is really to hero the lyric and the vocal line.
It's very interesting you should say that, because if you think about it, in the classical side, the songwriters, Lieder, Schubert and Schumann, Brahms, they had the poems, the great poems, yes, first, and set them to music, you see.
Rodney, thank you for sharing that. That's very interesting.
Look at Gilbert and Sullivan, those lovely comic operas. Sullivan got the libretto from Gilbert, and Gilbert said, here you are, now set this to music.
So interesting, because when we talk about, you know, Burt Bacharach and Hal David, you know, Burt Bacharach gets all of the acclaim.
Yes.
The guys did the music. And Hal David, who wrote those words, you know, why do birds suddenly appear every time you walk near, you know, just like me, they long
goose
to be close to you.
Stuff,
oh,
yes,
man.
It's goose flesh,
you know,
stuff.
You know, and yet, you know, we tend not to value that as much as the music side, which again shows it's a sort of a strange perception.
And it's a listening exercise. I mean, to listen to music properly, no matter what the music is, requires input on the listener. To listen to the words and how it ties up with the melody and how the emotion is brought across.
Absolutely. And the way I look at it is that the music is there to amplify the meaning, the emotion.
Of the words.
And the psychological depth of the words.
Yeah, that's what Schubert is about.
Wonderful.
You know, that song cycle he wrote called Die Winterreise, Winter's Journey, is all about this lovesick man wandering through winter. And the poems are beautiful. And that's what inspired Schubert to write that music. He didn't write it first and set some words to it. The words inspired him.
Yes. Oh, that's lovely to think about. And thanks for sharing that. You know, well, I almost feel like I'm alone in this quest. Now that you're saying that, you know, it makes me feel as though I'm not as crazy as what.
Well, I'm just wondering.
Some people
someone might, as you say, be strumming the guitar and can play three or four chords, but writing. Is very tricky. It's a gift to be able to write rhyming, the sort of rhythm of the lines that you write and the imagery you want to create. That's quite something. Is that what you help with?
That's definitely what we work with. As I mentioned earlier on, we try and marry the language of music and the music of language.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a term called prosody, which refers to the music of language. You know, it's the pace. It's the tone, it's the pitching of language. And one of the things that I teach in the course is melodization, where really what you're doing is you're taking the innate musicality of the word and you're amplifying it and you're exaggerating it to create melody. So
it's true.
Really, you can change the meaning of a sentence by just changing the inflection.
Yeah.
I can say, there's no more coffee, or we can say, there's no more coffee. It changes it from a statement of fact to a question.
To a question.
And this is what's interesting about it. So when a line is written, you know, it has a rhythm to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the
Absolutely.
Words have you know, there's a raising in pitch and a lowering in pitch.
Mm-hmm.
And the wonderful thing is, I think, really good writers, they write with that musicality. So it's not just for the cognitive meaning, it's for the pitching and pulsing of the words as well.
Because they are first and foremost a musician who is now writing words.
But I think even beautiful writing, whether it's poetry or prose, anything, you know, that sense of rhythm is the musicality of the writing is what really attracts us to it.
Going back to the classical thing, is Shakespeare has been set very often to music. So a composer has taken beautiful words, she never told her love, but let concealment, like a worm in the bud, feed on her damask cheek. Imagine setting that to music, which is done by Haydn, of all people.
Rodney, that was music. The way you said it, that was musical. It was beautiful.
Thank you. Right. Well, now, let's have your second piece of music before we go any further. And we've got Salim Kaji coming up now.
That's correct. Salim actually came to the songwriting school many, many years ago, and we've built up a really good relationship. I helped Salim with getting his first album together. We managed to secure a contract with EMI Records. And, you know, he had such a lovely voice.
He has got a lovely voice. He's sometimes called our Josh Groban.
Oh, there we go. So. He really is. And he's doing really well for himself. And it's what's interesting about this. You know, I talk about writing the words, you know, as the main part of it and the music coming secondary. But with Salim, because of his voice, I wrote his big song, Cry for Love, with the melody first to show off his voice.
Ah, that's interesting.
And then we put words to it. And then just to make it a little bit more intriguing and interesting, we had one of the verses translated into Italian just to give it that little special kind
romantic twist. So he and you wrote the words, or did he write the words?
No. I wrote the song. He assisted with some of the words. But,
okay.
You know, essentially, it was a song that I wrote specifically for him to kind of put him on the map, to show that beautiful voice off in the best possible way.
And that's what you're going to hear now. It's called "Cry for Love," and here's Salim Kaji.
Never felt I needed anybody in my life. I had everything I needed to survive. Life was for the taking, and time was on my side. Hearts were for the breaking, love was for the making, till I saw forever through your eyes. I cry for love, now that I lost you. I cry for love, now that you're gone. Amore, non c'è mormora per me, la mia vita è vuota, è tu sempre te, tutto ciò che sento. Oh,
It is a lovely voice, isn't it? Clive Salim Kaji there.
And he's doing really very well for himself at the moment.
A song that you, Clive, wrote for him, Cry for Love. And you recorded that with the Cape Town Philharmonic, the backing there, and with John Walton having orchestrated it.
That's great. It was a wonderful experience. Absolutely lovely.
And as we said, the sort of voice that no matter possibly what he sings, you will warm to it because he's singing those words with a kind of a communicative feel. He's talking to us directly.
He is. And, you know, he that's the kind of person that he is. He's a really genuine guy. And I think that's why he's doing so well, because he's got a lovely voice. You know, he's got the look that fits with the music style he's doing. Yeah. And he's just a genuine person who's really interested in his audience.
I'm talking to Clive Ridgway, a songwriter, musician, music producer, and also runs the Cape Town School of Songwriting. And I want to talk now a little bit about your book, this book that's sort of intriguing me lying here, Head, Heart and Hands, A Brave New Approach to Songwriting. More than music, it's the human connection. So what did you set out to do in this? Would this be a sort of textbook for people who come to you, or would it be interesting for general public reading?
I hope it would be interesting for general public reading or anybody who's interested in music, in song, and in how, you know, song communicates. So it does work as a textbook, if you want to call it that.
Yeah.
In fact, the first course based on this book we've just commenced a couple of weeks ago.
Okay, because there's some intriguing titles, Composing the Melody, Melodization, which you have mentioned, and then you have a section, Scrambled Eggs, No Complex Music Theory Required, Yin Yang and Rock and Roll, Just Enough Music Knowledge. So you're not putting people off by demanding that they have a Bachelor of Music degree, for example. They can come in with enthusiasm and talent.
Absolutely. And the book as well, it's one of those, I'm hoping that you can open it anywhere and get something sort of anecdotally or, you know, something interesting in terms of information.
Well,
it's written in bite-sized chunks.
Absolutely. So it's easy to sort out where you want to go.
Yeah.
Words are compositional, which is what you've been saying, isn't it, through
That's
the morning?
Right, yeah.
In the same way that a musical motive is a composition of notes that pulse and pitch meaningfully, a language phrase is a composition of syllables that pulse and pitch meaningfully. There you go, exactly what we talked about.
That's it, yeah.
And that's why when you read these poems by the great poets, it works so well. But now, do you – I think I said you do auditions and things, but the people who come to you must have some sort of talent. They're not starting from scratch, are they? Maybe the writing part, they're starting from scratch, the words.
So a lot of musicians come and then they want to learn how to write words to go.
Because they can already play.
And, you know, that's a relatively easy process because most people will have tried to do that in the past. So I just give them a few pointers in that regard. The big challenge there is that because the music is set, it then becomes quite difficult to kind of make sure that those words really fit in terms of the rhythm. People who come with who dabble in writing or poetry, I welcome them also, and then we assist them with the music if need be.
Mm-hmm.
And I always say that you just need a rudimentary knowledge of music. It's just, you know, the ability to play piano or guitar is more to just anchor the key of the song.
Yes.
You know, because I find that people who, when they work with melodies and they don't have the instrument as the reference point, the melodies tend to kind of wander.
Yes.
And sprawl.
I was just thinking, as you said that, I've often wondered actually how a musician decides on what key to choose for some words that he's written, when you think of the vast number of keys there are these days, 24, I think.
Well, it depends on the skill level of the musician, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah.
But generally speaking, you know, most people, when they play an instrument, they write in if they're writing for themselves, in a key that's comfortable for the voice. But there's another aspect to it as well. There's a term called tessitura. I don't know if you know that.
Tessitura, yes.
And that really has got to do with the kind of register in which you sing. So when you sing in the lower register, it's very warm and rich and full. If you move into a higher key where you're extending the voice higher, it thins out the voice.
Yes.
But what it tends to do, it adds emotion. So mm-hmm. you're going, whoa.
And a bit of tension as
well. And tension. Yeah. So that's, that's and tessitura.
And so these people do teach them things like moving from key to key.
We
modulation.
What we focus on mostly is the essentials.
Yes,
we
of
don't
course.
Get too in too much detail because my approach is about writing songs that are simple, singable, and sincere.
Three S's.
That's right.
Simple, singable, and sincere. Mm-hmm. I'm just thinking I'm not a writer of words. I don't know where I would start if I wanted to write a song. Presumably the person has an idea. Clive, I would like to write about an incident that happened to me with a girl on the beach in Cape Town 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And you would then say, that sounds interesting, and lead them through it.
Well, there we go. So that's your concept.
Yes.
Now, after that, we say, okay, now let's think of what style would we be writing in. So is this going to be a bossa nova? You know, are we thinking of Girl from Ipanema, a Cape Town version yeah. of Girl from Ipanema?
Right.
Then we think of the next thing is, okay, so what will our hook line be? What would that line, you know, the most beautiful girl in the world, you know, is in just coming to my world, whatever.
Yes, the hook is, every song has to have a hook, doesn't it?
So concept, then a hook. Then we've got a feel that we want to write according to in terms of the rhythm and the melody. And then we basically flesh that out and create a narrative.
Mm-hmm. You make it sound easy, but of course it's a huge gift, isn't it? And to be taught that must be very special mm-hmm. for these musicians who are coming along.
It's a wonderful process. What I try to do is I try to make the process visible.
Mm-hmm.
So that it's not this mysterious process. But when they start writing, they've got a roadmap. There's a method.
That's a good way of putting it, a roadmap, yeah. a sort of template thing almost.
That's right, yeah.
Let's have another piece of music now. I see this is called Forgiveness, and it was written for the closing of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission in Cape Town, once again with a CTPO, orchestra, and John Walton arranging it. Tell me a little bit about this. Is it your song? Did you write it?
Yes, this was written all those years ago. I was driving home. One day, and I saw the newspaper posters on the polls, and it said the Truth and Reconciliation was coming to Cape Town. Can Cape Town forgive? And it hit me quite hard when because of our history and and I thought this is a song that needs to be written. And what was interesting, I approached the SABC at the time. They just opened the Beach Road Studios there, and I said, "Listen, I've got this song. My brother Tony and I had written the song." And I said, wouldn't this be a great project for the opening of your studio in the SABC? And I said, yeah, that'll be great. Why don't we get Jonathan Butler in to do it? And they flew me from overseas, got best musicians around. The orchestra came in to record. And we got the blessing of Archbishop Desmond Tutu. And the song was recorded at the SABC Sunset Studios, and it turned out beautifully.
Now, you said also for the closing of the TRC, where it was all about forgiveness and reconciliation, was it used there as well?
It was meant to be used at the closing of the TRC. It didn't happen because of the fact that we know that the TRC was extended.
Oh, yes, of course, yes.
Much longer than, mm-hmm. than it was supposed to be. The closing was supposed to take place. But nevertheless, it's just a wonderful song that we're so happy to have written and been involved with.
Okay, so here it is called Forgiveness.
We keep singing, stronger than the army sent to war, more precious than the gifts we keep on keeping. It's more important than all we've done before. Forgiveness, forgiveness, forgiveness. Your last few tears, mother, tell it to your children, children, and father, bring your family near. For now's the time to take away those chains around our hearts to forgiveness.
That piece called Forgiveness, which was written by my guest on People of Note this week, Clive Ridgway, who has fascinated me actually by what he's been saying about the human connection in many things, especially in songwriting and music. And his latest book is called Head, Heart and Hands, A Brave New Approach to Songwriting, More Than Music, It's the Human Connection, which even just paging through it here in the studio, Clive, it looks completely fascinating.
Lovely.
Can you get this book, incidentally, in the bookshops?
Yes, it should be available. It's been published by Naledi Publishers.
So it'll be exclusive books,
yeah,
and that sort of thing. I want to find out more about you. You've hinted at all the things you've done when you were three or four. You heard Nat King Cole singing Mona Lisa. At what point did you decide you wanted to become a musician and start learning your first instrument?
You know, my brothers and I, we always just played music. You know, when we were very young, I had an elder brother who's passed away now, had an exquisite voice. And we were Catholic, and we went to a Catholic school. And at that time, it was boys' choirs in church.
Very much so, in choir. Lovely training ground.
Yeah, and Greg, at the age of six, was asked to sing soprano in the choir, and I tagged along. You know, I was a year younger, and I, you know, couldn't really, you know, didn't even know what I was singing. And I just tagged along, but I think it was the choir and then just moving into music and discovering rock and roll, that something happened. And, you know, my dad bought us a couple of guitars, which we couldn't really play, but we just kind of strummed along. And then with the you know, not knowing how to play these instruments, we kind of, I guess, just tuned it by ear and then started sort of just making up our own music with it. And not being proficient enough, we couldn't do cover versions of songs, so we just started making up our own songs, putting our own words to it. And this kind of magical thing happened. It just became something that we did forever. Mm-hmm. And so through, you know, high school, you know, going to the army, you know, going to university, it was just music, 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 music. And even though, you know, I studied, you know, as something to fall back on, which is interesting, you know. They always say, you know, if you've got something to fall back on, you will fall back. But it's taken me, you know, sort of 60 years to fall back on the teaching. But I then, you know, played music, you know, at the same time as I was doing my university degree and even doing teaching prac. And somewhere along the line, it just happened that it became professional. And I think the great differentiator was the fact that we were writing our own songs. Mm-hmm. And so we became a little bit more sought after than the average band, because we were playing on the circuit and we were supplying some of the more well-known artists with original material.
Like that list I read at the beginning, yeah. Which is a whole host of big names. But you've got, as it says, academic teaching and business qualifications from Wits and Stellenbosch. Yeah. So those degrees, are they teaching academic business? They're not music degrees necessarily.
No. The music is all...
It was just natural for
all
you.
All natural. You know, like, you know, the interesting thing, most of the well-known popular singer-songwriters, you know, are just musicians who write songs. Mm. So I'm in that tradition. I sometimes wish I knew a little bit more. I've unpacked a lot of the
sure
music theory along the way.
Yes.
And the wonderful thing I always say is that I've learned the music theory backwards. So I learned to play music first and then to figure out what I was doing afterwards, and which is interesting because even when it comes to, you know, music notation. Mm-hmm. You know, again, we sometimes kind of do things a little bit backwards. We teach music theory first, then we ask people to play. And I, you know, remember that music notation was only there as a way to record, you know, on paper,
yes,
what has been played and written. So it's an interesting thing again. Alternative way of looking at things.
Absolutely. So now I'm quite interested to hear this next piece of music you've chosen, which is Moon River, mm, in a recording with Audrey Hepburn, which I haven't heard yet. Where does this come from?
It comes from the movie. You know, I love the book, Breakfast at Tiffany's. I pick it up, you know, take it out and read it over and over again because of the beautiful writing.
Yes.
And it's got that lovely lyrical way of, you know, Truman Capote had of writing. And then, you know, that song, Moon River, I mean, it's just an exquisite song. You know, simple, simple, simple. You know, again, it's that, remember what I said, singable, simple, and sincere. It has all of those things. And this version, I think it's about 1.5 minutes long, where she strums a guitar and sings with a bit of strings coming in towards the end of the song. It is just the ideal that I have of the kind of song that I want to write. And it's that type of song that I teach at the songwriting school.
See, we're at the same rainbows end, waiting round the bend, my huckleberry friend. Oh, river and me.
That's, I'd never heard that before, Clive. Audrey Hepburn singing Moon River from Breakfast at Tiffany's. And what a beautiful song that is as well.
So beautiful.
You've introduced us to some lovely music, like Mona Lisa you were talking about much earlier. Clive, I just want to say thank you and wish you well, because this Cape Town School of Songwriting, it's a massive project, and it's been going for a while now, and by all accounts is churning out good people.
It is, and we're very proud of what we do. We're small, you know, we don't have, you know, huge ambitions. The important thing is to develop a songwriting culture, but one that is aimed at genuinely making a difference. And ultimately, this new method that I'm teaching is about songwriting that creates critical thinking and mindfulness, and ultimately leads to action, which is transformation.
Yeah.
You know, and that transformation I'm talking about is us just kind of, you know, moving towards being the best versions or human beings, that versions of ourselves,
yes,
or human beings that we can be. And I think song has got can play a beautiful role in that.
Absolutely. What a good idea you have there, Clive. But now, you say it's the 8-week courses, are they? You go once a week.
Yes. 8-week courses, and then everybody who comes to the songwriting school writes a song according to this method, and so they leave with a fully written song.
Mm-hmm.
And people that are songwriters then write in this method, and you know, they see if it works for them. And generally speaking, when people leave, the one comment that I get more than any other comment is that, you know, you've taught me to listen to music and listen to songs differently.
Ah, there you are. That's magical. I always say music needs to be listened to, yeah. Not background music.
It
must be listened
yeah.
to, and especially yeah. if there are lovely words attached.
Correct, yeah.
Okay, now, how do people get hold of you? You have a website address.
That's right. We're at www.songwriters.co.za.
Okay, and your book, you say, is available in places like probably Exclusive Books. It's
yes.
called Head, Heart and Hands, A Brave New Approach to Songwriting by Clive Ridgway, who's been my guest on People of Note this week. Clive, what's the last song? Make the Difference. I see this is your band.
That's right. My brother Tony and I wrote this song, and it just sums up, you know, in one way, the style of songwriting that I'm promoting, which is simple, sincere, and singable. It tells a little story, and you know the positioning line or the hook line is that it's about the little acts of love and kindness that make the difference. It's not necessarily us trying to change the world. You know, we change the world around us.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the best starting point that you can have.
Perfect, perfect. Clive Ridgway, thank you very much.
Rodney, it's been so wonderful being here. I'm very grateful. Thank you so much.
Got the frown on a pretty little face, 'cause she doesn't feel a mother's love. She raised the tear in his tired eyes, 'cause the road he walks is rough. When putting food on the family table is hard and times are tough, little acts of love and kindness make the difference. Knowing what to do, they say it's not knowing after all. We're all in this together, through the rising and the fall. We can watch the rich get richer and the poor get left behind, or we can gently shift the balance, one act of kindness at a time. Somebody's hero any time of day by those little things you do and the kind of words you say. Now everybody's trying to do what they believe is right. Some will turn the other cheek, some will stand and fight, and somewhere in between the silence and the violence, little acts of love and kindness make a difference. Pretty little face, 'cause she doesn't feel a mother's love. Trace the tear in his tired eyes, 'cause the road he walks is rough. When putting food on the family table is hard and times are tough, little acts of love and kindness make a difference. Love and kindness make the difference. Go on and make somebody's day. Make a difference.
How many roads must a man down before you call him a man? How many seas must the white dove sail before she sleeps in the sand. Yes, and how many times must the cannonballs fly before they're forever banned? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind. Yes, and how many years can a mountain exist before it is washed to the sea? Yes, and how many years can some people exist before they're allowed to be free? Yes, and how many times can a man turn his head and pretend that he just doesn't see? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind. Yes, and how many times must a man look up before he can see the sky? Yes, and how many ears must one man have before he can hear people cry? Yes, and how many deaths will it take till he knows that too many people have died? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind.
People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Turin Productions.